Current State on WKAR. I'm Melissa Benmark, sitting in for Mark Bayshore. Well, emerald ash borers are tiny creatures, smaller than a penny, with metallic green shells, big black eyes. They'd almost be cute if they weren't so destructive. This tiny beetle's big appetite has had a devastating impact on forests in the U.S. The infestation, discovered in Michigan in 2002, has already killed tens of millions of ash trees. And now some researchers in Ohio say they've found evidence that the insect has made its way to a new host, the white fringe tree. Here to talk about the implications of that finding and to give us an update on the emerald ash borer infestation in Michigan is Deb McCullough. She's a professor in both the Department of Entomology and the Department of Forestry at MSU and is more or less the ash borer czar, as far as I can tell. Welcome back to Current State, Deb. Thanks
nice
for joining us.
Nice to see you, Melissa.
Good to see you, too. So just a quick summary for folks who may not have known about the emerald ash borer. When did they get to Michigan and how did they get here?
Well, we didn't know anything about emerald ash borer until the summer of 2002, and that's when it became apparent that ash trees in the greater Detroit area were dying, and eventually we got this beetle identified. We've since done some research and found that emerald ash borer was in areas like Garden City and Westland by the early 1990s and possibly even by the late 1980s or 1990.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, that's not unusual. A lot of these invasive pests come in and it takes about 10 years before anybody notices them. And we don't know for sure how it came in, but we have a really good idea that it probably arrived in solid wood packing material, crating and pallets, that kind of thing. Yeah, that's what is used to ship containers of cargo. And it probably came from China. That's where it's most abundant.
So what kind of an impact have they had on ash trees in the state since they arrived here?
It's been pretty terrible, actually. If you think about southeast Michigan alone, there's somewhere around 100 or 120 million ash trees, counting urban ash trees in the woods, along rivers and so forth. And I would say probably 80 to 85% of those are dead now. We have five ash species in Michigan, and at least two of them, green ash and black ash, are very vulnerable and pretty much are going down, unless they're urban trees that are being treated with one of the more recently discovered insecticides.
So a scientist in Ohio recently discovered that this bug has moved to the white fringe tree. Thing one, I have never heard of a white fringe tree. What is that? And thing two, what kind of implications does that have?
Well, to be honest, I had never paid attention to white fringe tree myself. I thought it was an exotic species, perhaps. But it turns out it's a small tree, or most of the ones that you see photos of are shrubby. It's actually most abundant in the southeastern U.S., but we have a few on campus. There's some over in the Beale Garden, for example. I think people use them as ornamental plants, and then in the southeast, they'll kind of be underneath the larger trees or along the edge. And yes, a fellow, Don Cipollini, who's at Dayton University, noticed a white fringe tree, a little shrubby thing, and it looked bad, and he looked at it more closely, and it turned out to have been infested by emerald ash borer. And he's since found a few other trees with emerald ash borer under the bark feeding away. And, you know, it's unfortunate. In a way, I don't think it's all that surprising, though. Because if you think about humans, we like to organize things, we like to group things, and so we have species, and we have 16 ash species, and they are all in one genus, Fraxinus. And then if you look at other plants that are related to ash in the same family, the olive family, we call it Oleaceae, the group of trees that are most closely related to ash trees are white fringe trees. And so to us, they're in a different genus, but to an insect, they don't really care about what Latin name we give things. And so a white fringe tree may not be all that different from an ash tree for some of these insects. Now, having said that, we've looked at the white fringe trees on campus, and there's no evidence that ash borer has colonized any of them. And Lord knows we've had plenty of ash borer around for the last 5 or 6 years.
So that does seem unusual, I guess, to us. But when you think that it would move from one to the other, but then again, you know, we eat different species of salmon all the time too, and doesn't, you know.
Yeah, that's, you know, these organizations, these Latin names are kind of a human construct. On the other hand, you know, we've been working on ash borer for 12 years now, and we still are finding out things every year that we didn't know before. And there were actually Asian reports, little tiny taxonomy kinds of nuggets of information that people had collected this beetle in Korea and China, possibly Japan, from Asian species of elm, walnut, and wingnut, which is related to hickory that we have here. And we've tested all of those trees, the species that grow in North America, and we can't get them to feed on those different kinds of trees. So that's a good thing. On the other hand, in this group of olive, the olive family, privet, which is a real common shrubby hedge thing, if it gets big enough and you get some stems that are a couple inches in diameter, potentially ash borer might colonize that because it is closely related to ash. And we know the adult beetles can feed on privet leaves, and they don't like them, but they'll do okay. But we've never been able to get the larvae to complete development, which they have done on white fringe tree. So, you know, I think there's still things to learn about this insect. We may find another group of plants that it can survive on if it needs to.
That privacy hedge might not be so private anymore, huh? So in terms of trying to figure out how it operates and learning more about it, the U.S. Forest Service recently put out a call to the public to help them find survivor trees, which are ash that have been able to withstand an emerald ash borer infestation. What can those trees tell us, and how would someone know if one was in their yard?
That's a term that's been coined for those trees are lingering ash trees, and it refers to trees that are growing in an area that's been devastated by emerald ash borer, where all the other ash trees are pretty much dead, and yet you have one that it's at least, let's say, 4 inches in diameter, large enough to have been attacked some years ago, and yet it's still alive and maybe still looks good. And if it is resistant, then there's a lot of value in trying to understand what made that tree either distasteful to the beetles or it didn't attract them, or in some way it was able to resist the larval feeding. Now, on the other hand, it might have just been lucky, because we know that happens too. You know,
right. We've
got big elm trees that just managed to escape Dutch elm disease. So there is a lot of interest in finding these and tracking them. Now, some of the lingering ash that have been followed for a couple of years ended up being colonized and killed. So it's not an easy thing to do. And there's a lot that goes into trying to look at resistance and whether it has to do with not attracting the female beetle who's going to lay eggs on a tree, or if it happens when the larvae are under the bark and starting to feed.
So say somebody thought they had a tree in their yard that was an ash survivor tree. What thing one, who would they tell? And thing two, would this tree be, you know, I can imagine people saying, well, I don't want them cutting down my tree to study it.
Yeah, that's a good point. I would say the first thing is to make sure it's an ash tree, because we've gotten dozens of reports of resistant ash trees that turned out to be hickories, box elder, black cherry, and black walnut.
Uh-huh, those are the black thins.
Yes. They're not going to cut your tree down. They may collect some wood from it, some shoots, some bark. And the Forest Service, there's actually a website. You can go emeraldashboard.info, and you can get links and follow up and even just email a question, and we can tell you exactly who to contact.
What kind of ripple effects does the death of all these ash trees have on the surrounding ecosystem, besides potentially, obviously, the bugs moving on to another plant?
Well, that's a really good question, and that's something that we're still grappling with, if you will. You know, ash trees have died in huge numbers in southeast and central Michigan and parts of Ohio, and this is going to radiate out across much in North America, most likely. And a lot depends on how abundant the ash trees are in that particular forest and what species they are. Black ash, for example, which you find in northern lower Michigan and the UP, is extremely vulnerable. And we're not finding lingering ash, we're just finding dead black ash. And when that one goes, it's going to have major ecological effects, because there aren't other trees that grow in those areas. And now you're losing the leaves that would be dropped in the autumn. That's an influx of nutrients that's not going to happen anymore. The birds don't have a place to sit. There's insects and little invertebrates that use ash for some part of their life. We're not sure what's going to happen. Green ash is almost in that same situation. You can have other tree species that are mixed with the ash will take over sometimes, and they'll fill those canopy gaps. One of the things that we're most worried about is that invasive plants, unpleasant things like buckthorn, for example, could take over those canopy gaps and exclude some of the native trees. So it really varies.
MSU professor and emerald ash borer expert Deb McCullough, as always, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Melissa. Have a good day.
You too.